Sterling warily watched flesh and organs in the ravine for any unnatural motion. Only a Phoebe trusted a mutie, even a dead one.
Everybody okay?
No! Gil got hit!
Turning from the ravine, Sterling saw Gil holding a knife in his hand and poking at the piece of tentacle across his left arm.
I can't cut it off. Fucking thorn's in deep.
Sterling slid the strap of his long blaster over his shoulder.
Put that blade away. We gotta burn it off.
I was hoping if I move fast enough...
Gil stabbed the knife under the throbbing length of plant once more. Then he dropped his shoulders.
That was a Stoop's wish, huh, Chief?
Would have tried the same thing myself, Gil. Burning is no fun. Carstairs!
Sir?
You and Porter... You and Taylor, check the horses for damage. Chang, watch their backs. I'll do Gil.
Carstairs cast a glance at the body parts strewn about.
Shouldn't we move away from here first? All this blood and meat is gonna attract every pred for clicks.
Preds, wrists, and muties, you mean?
No time.
Sterling helped Gil off his horse and onto a nearby mound of dirt.
We do this fast or Gil joins the Sky Choir.
Sitting, the sweaty man watched as Sterling wrapped a cloth around the upper part of the wounded arm, then tied the rag into a tight tourniquet. The trickle of blood from the gaping end of the vine slowed, but not by much. Sterling pulled a bag of black powder from a pouch on his gun belt.
Better find something to bite on.
I got some shite in my bags. That'll help kill the pain.
Gil pulled off his gun belt.
And make me useless for the rest of the night? Just do it and be fast.
Pouring the black powder along the spiky piece of vine, the sec chief said nothing, concentrating on the work. When the ammo bag was empty, Sterling passed it to Gil, who stuffed the leather into his mouth. Thumbing a butane lighter alive, the sec chief glanced at his friend. Gil gave a nod, and Sterling lit the powder. There was a blinding flare, and every muscle in Gil's body went rigid. He was lost in the searing glare, but as the harsh light died away, Sterling saw that the smoldering vine lay twitching on the ground. A neat line of holes went across the sec man's arm, but the bleeding had already slowed to a trickle, then stopped completely.
Bet you could use that drink now.
Sterling angrily stomped his boot to grind the charred vine into the ground. The smoking length crumbled apart and finally ceased to move.
Gil?
But the sec man lay slumped over on the mound of earth. Worried, Sterling checked the man's pulse, but found it strong and steady. He had just fallen unconscious from the pain. Gently rubbing the old wound on his own shoulder, Sterling really couldn't fault the man. He'd done the same thing himself once. Carstairs stepped closer to offer one of the new med kits.
Should we let him sleep? We could build a fire, and there's plenty of blankets.
The kit was just a lumpy canvas bag, with the letters M-A-S-H carefully stitched into the fabric. Mildred had showed the Ville healers a lot of tricks for keeping people alive. Shine to wash wounds, foiled white cloth for bandages and such. These crude duplicates of her pre-dark med kit were the result. With one of these, a sec man had 100 times better chance of surviving a wound than ever before. Just another of the countless debts for which they could never completely repay the Outlanders. Sterling opened the canvas bag.
Hell no. We get moving. The smell of blood is in the wind. And soon this place is going to be overrun with animals and muties fighting over the scraps of the drinker.
Maybe even a second drinker.
Taylor checked the load in the scattergun. He closed the breech and set the lock.
We got enough bombs to stop another one, but not while we're also fighting Scream Wings.
Chang suddenly appeared, reloading his revolver.
Okay. Vines fell on 2 of the horses and I had to ace them. So we'll have to double up or drop supplies.
We drop nothing.
Sterling poured shine over Gil's arm. The raw alcohol washed the open wounds and became tinted with red. The man gave no response. Satisfied, Sterling put away the bottle of shine and started to wrap the forearm. The cloth strips had been immersed in boiling water for as long as a man could hold his breath. Something about killing stuff called gems or germs. Whatever. Mildred had taught them this. Tying off the bandage, Sterling packed the med supplies into the canvas bag. Everybody Mildred treated got better 10 times faster than seemed possible, so maybe she was right about germs. Killing was Sterling's job, not putting folks back together afterward.
Okay, we're short on rides.
Sterling slung the canvas bag over the pommel of his horse and tenderly scratched it behind the ears.
Divvy up the food, keep all of the ammo, and we'll travel in pairs. Chang rides with me, Costes with Gil, Taylor gets all of the extra bombs and water.
Without comment, the two Sunville sec men rushed to their assigned tasks, who were soon galloping away from the ravine. Taking the lead, Sterling realized that he had lost all sense of direction fleeing from the drinker. Arbitrarily, he chose the largest object in sight to guide them through the night, and headed the group straight for the jagged peaks of the Mohawk Mountains. There was a thick copse a few clicks away that they could bed down in for the night. The sec men should be safe enough there, he hoped. The roiling clouds filled the sky as the companions raced across the New Mexico desert. A dull glow emanated from above, but whether it was the full moon or airborne rats rich with hot isotopes was impossible to say. Then the moon broke through for a scant moment, bathing the world in cool, silvery light, before vanishing behind the curtain of polluted clouds once more. Hours passed as the miles flew beneath the pounding hooves of their horses. Soon the ground turned into a mix of sand and soil. Then came irregularly spaced tufts of weeds and grass. Finally, the companions galloped across a flat grassland. There was no reeking taint of acid rain on the wind, only the sweet smell of living plants. So the companions gave the animals their heads and let them run free, stretching their muscles as the group moved swiftly across one of the small sections of the zone that was still alive. Doc inhaled the clean breeze.
Lovely. Just lovely.
Ryan scowled darkly at the pronouncement. JB pulled an anti-personnel grand from his munitions bag and checked the tape on the arming handle.
Yeah, swell. As long as we don't run into any drinkers. Grass and sand are a bad mix.
Especially on the fairway near the sixth hole.
Her red hair streaming in the wind, Christy shot the physician a strange look. Mildred could only shrug, unable to explain the golfing illusion. Then she gave a start. Just a minute. There was a water hole here, and copses of trees standing in the middle of nowhere, long stretches of flat grassland. They were riding across a golf course. Okay, one overrun with weeds and bushes, now mixing with the real desert, and slightly nuked 100 years ago, but still easily identifiable as a golf course. Now Mildred's quote made sense.
You spotted the design too, eh, madam?
Kinda hard to miss when you know what to look for.
Mildred hunkered lower in her saddle. The fairway only incurred uncomfortable memories for the woman, and she concentrated on riding. The game of golf was as far in the past to her now as a New Year's Eve party, long gone and only dimly remembered. Ryan's rad counter suddenly started to click wildly, and he abruptly veered to the left, starting a long, curving sweep across the flat landscape. The others had seen this sort of thing many times before and stayed close. Ryan couldn't see any indications of a blast crater. There were no glowing pits or glass lakes. But he knew that could simply mean the area had been hit with one of those airburst atomic bombs he'd read about. Perhaps one of those neutron things that killed folks but didn't harm the buildings or plants. Jack arched a snowy eyebrow.
Gulf? I don't see no sign of ocean.
No, not a gulf. Golf. It's a game, you see, and... Never mind. Just old talk.
Bent lower over his mare, Jack accepted the answer with a shrug. He knew the physician had been born long before Skydark, and sometimes talked about things almost impossible to translate clearly. He never would have understood the notion of an elevator until taking a ride in one in the redoubts. Keeping careful track of the rise and fall of the clicks of the rad counter, Ryan and JB directed the companions past the lingering depth of the invisible rad zone. Once the clicks returned to the normal level of background rad, Ryan called a halt on the crest of a low, sweeping hillock. The elevation gave them a commanding view of the landscape. Even in the dappled light from the moving clouds, they could see there was nobody around for miles in any direction. With the butt of the Steyr resting on an outthrust hip, Ryan stood guard while the companions watered their tired horses. Rummaging in a pocket, JB pulled out his recently acquired compass and waited for the needle to settle down. But it kept spinning about madly, occasionally pausing to then start rotating in the reverse direction. Frustrated, JB tucked the device away.
Oh, to hell with it. There's just too much crap in the air from the clouds to get a clean magnetic reading.
Spooning some spaghetti from an MRE pack, Mildred caught the motion but said nothing. JB had traded with a Baron's brother for the compass in exchange for a grin. At the time, it seemed like a bargain, but now she could see in the armorer's face how much he wanted that grin back.
Those compass things really work?
Mildred shoveled in another mouthful of pasta and sauce.
Absolutely. Oh, a Boy Scout compass or something from the military would be a lot better, but then half the world was explored with a magnetic needle resting on a piece of cork that floated in a bowl of water.
Uh-huh.
Doc lowered his canteen and wiped his mouth with a linen handkerchief that had seen better days.
It is true, Jack. In the Hong Dynasty of ancient China, a magnetic needle was worth the owner's weight in gold. That would roughly translate today into, say, twice your body weight of live brass.
That much?
Christy watched something flying through the distant clouds to the west. It looked like a flock of scream wings. Thankfully, the deadly winged muties were heading in another direction. Must be a fresh kill, because they were moving even faster than usual. Ryan bit off a chunk of jerky from their Tucsonville supplies.
Trader always said that the only thing constant was change. Nowadays, a hammer is more valuable than one of those microscopes I read about.
Noticing Christie's posture, JB pulled out his long eye. He had found the old Navy telescope in a pawn shop in the place they called Zero City, and it was in perfect condition. About the size of your fist, it extended to over a full yard in length, and was much better than even binocs. Pushing back his fedora, JB began to sweep the horizon, but all he could see was blackness. But then, something caught his eye. He kept looking into the glasses while his companions, oblivious, talked amongst themselves.
The center is chaos. The circle cannot hold.
Using both hands, Doc unwrapped a package of cheese and crackers from the open MRE in the pocket of his frock coat. The cheese was a dull gray in color, but since that was its natural color, he paid it no special attention. The pre-dark military machine wanted the food for its troops to be nourishing and long-lasting, but apparently nobody gave a damn if it was appetizing.
Stop misquoting William Blake. Besides, we have miles to go before we sleep.
And who is quoting whom now, madam?
Stuff it, you old coot.
JB finally collapsed the antique telescope down to its compact size.
Heads up, we're not alone. There's a ville to the northwest of here, about 40 miles away.
Ripping off one last chew, Ryan stuffed the rest of the jerky into a shirt pocket.
Let's go see if we can barter for a night under a roof. We have enough black powder to trade.
Moving off the hillock, the companions started for the distant town, staying in a loose formation. The clouds were thinning, and the moon was starting to dip behind the curve of the world by the time the companions galloped over a swell in the ground and got a direct bead of the ville. It was a big place, with a yellowish glow of torches coming from behind a high wall built of huge rectangular blocks. The gate was small, but several guard towers were spaced evenly along the perimeter. Easing on the reins, Ryan scowled. They had to have a lot of enemies to erect such a strong defense. Or else, maybe there were drinkers in the area. Either way, it wasn't very good news. As the companions got closer, they found signs of crude farming in the surrounding land. But the crops were stunted and scraggly, clearly showing there was something wrong with the soil, in spite of the lush grass spreading out in every direction.
Lots of plants grow in places where food can't. Could be a muty form of grass.
Also means this part of the zone is a prime location for drinkers to hide under. Stay razor for any large clumps of grass.
And if we encounter the infamous subterranean muty, or another of those triple-cursed jellies?
Start throwing grins and run for your life.